Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, July 22nd, 2022. From the front page, Biden drops out. President endorses his VP Harris to take the ticket's top spot. Associated Press, Washington. President Joe Biden dropped out of the 2024 race for the White House on Sunday, ending his bid for re-election after a disastrous debate with Donald Trump that raised doubts about the incumbent's fitness for office. The unprecedented announcement, delivered less than 4 months before the election, immediately upended a campaign that both political parties view as the most consequential in generations. The president, intent on serving out the remainder of his term in office, quickly endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to take on Trump and encouraged his party to unite behind her, making her the party's instant favorite for the nomination at its August convention in Chicago. The announcement is the latest jolt to a tumultuous campaign for the White House, coming a week after the attempted assassination of Trump at a Pennsylvania rally. A party's presumptive presidential nominee has never stepped out of the race so close to the election. President Lyndon Johnson, besieged by the Vietnam War, announced in March 1968 that he would not seek another term after just a single state's primary. Biden's decision comes after more than 14 million Democrats cast votes supporting him through the primary process. In a statement, Harris praised Biden's selfless and patriotic act and said she intends to earn and win her party's nomination. Biden's decision to bow out came after escalating pressure from his Democratic allies to step aside following the June 27th debate. It has been the greatest honor of my life to serve as your president, and while it has been in my intention to seek re-election, I believe it is in the best interest of my party and the country for me to stand down and to focus solely on fulfilling my duties as president for the remainder of my term, Biden wrote in a letter posted Sunday to social media. Nearly 30 minutes after he delivered the news that he dropped his campaign, Biden threw his support behind Harris. Today, I want to offer my full support and endorsement for Kamala to be the nominee of our party this year, he said in another post on social media. Democrats, it's time to come together and beat Trump. Democrats have to urgently try to bring coherence to the nomination process in a matter of weeks and convince voters in a stunningly short amount of time that their nominee can handle the job and beat Trump. And for his part, Trump must shift his focus to a new opponent after years of training his attention on Biden. The decision marks a swift and stunning end to Biden's 52 years in electoral politics, as donors, lawmakers, and even aides expressed to him their doubts that he could convince voters that he could plausibly handle the job for another 4 years. Biden won the vast majority of delegates and every nominating contest but one, which would have made his nomination a formality. Now that he has dropped out, those delegates will be free to support another candidate. Harris, 59, appeared to be the natural successor, in large part because she is the only candidate who can directly tap into the Biden campaign's war chest, according to federal campaign finance rules. Also from the front page of today's paper, Illinois Reaction Split, by Allison Petty. Governor J.B. Pritzker and top Illinois Democrats praised President Joe Biden's record and patriotism Sunday, while Republicans noted their past questions about Biden's fitness for the job in light of his decision to leave the presidential race. President Joe Biden has dedicated his life and service to this nation, and its citizens are all the better for it, said Pritzker, who previously stressed that he would support Biden after the president met with Democratic governors earlier this month. His is a storied political career, culminating in one of the most accomplished and effective presidencies of our lifetime. The second-term governor's statement did not mention Vice President Kamala Harris, whom Biden encouraged Democrats to nominate in his place at their national convention, set for August 19th to 22nd in Chicago. However, Pritzker made a point of mentioning his support for Harris on July 9th, when he told reporters that he would wholeheartedly campaign for Biden as the Democratic Party nominee. It was unclear on Sunday whether Democrats would unite behind Harris. Some, such as U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski of Springfield, endorsed her immediately. Others, including U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, failed to mention Harris in their initial statements after Biden's announcement. Republicans, meanwhile, were fresh out of their national convention in Milwaukee, where former President Donald Trump accepted the party's nomination Thursday at the conclusion of the four-day event. Illinois party leaders seized on an opportunity to contrast Democrats' behavior with their own coalescence behind Trump. Democrats are divided, torn apart by their own duplicity, trying to pass off President Biden's inability to fulfill his role, while Republicans stand united behind President Trump and his agenda of freedom, prosperity, and safety, Illinois Republican Party Chair Kathy Salvey said in a statement. For his part, Pritzker was also quick to turn the focus to Trump, whom he described as racist, homophobic, and misogynist. Trump brags about taking away a woman's right to choice, wants to rip health care away from tens of millions of people, proposes economic policies that will cost the middle class thousands of dollars a year, and threatens the fundamental American ideals we hold dear, Pritzker said. I will work every day to ensure that he does not win in November. Here's more of what Illinois' political leaders are saying as of press time. Senator Tammy Duckworth. No one has done more for working Americans than Joe Biden, and so many of us owe him a debt of gratitude for everything he's done to improve our country. Over more than 50 years in public service, he's built an unparalleled record of accomplishments, from helping write the Violence Against Women Act in the Senate to shepherding the Affordable Care Act into law as vice president, and from helping guide our nation out of a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic to overseeing historic wage and job growth during his presidency. Joe Biden has always put our country first and worked to change so many aspects of our lives for the better. From the bottom of my heart, I thank him for his effective and successful leadership, and for once again putting our country before himself. This difficult decision ensures that Democrats can focus on the goal that unites each and every one of us, defeating Donald Trump and preventing another 4 years of his destructive chaos and corruption. U.S. Representative Mary Miller, Republican, Hinesboro. Kamala Harris led the Democrats' cover-up of Joe Biden's severe cognitive decline. Their donors only forced Biden out once they get caught. Kamala Harris must answer for the deadly invasion of our southern border and her cover-up of the cognitive decline. The American people deserve to know who is actually running the country right now, since the Democrats are finally admitting it is not Joe Biden. U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat, Springfield. Joe Biden has been the most productive and consequential president of my lifetime. His leadership has allowed us to deliver historic investments to communities in central and southern Illinois that will benefit working people for generations to come. I thank him for his lifetime of public service and for putting our country first as he passes the baton to Vice President Harris. It's time that we come together in November. Illinois Democratic County Chairs Association President Mark Guthrie. I am holding my head high today for President Joe Biden, the Democratic Party, and for America. This November, we must all unite to stop Donald Trump from winning a second term. And President Biden has decided that for the good of the country, that someone else is right for the job. Joe Biden's record of accomplishments as our president is unprecedented. He has fought for unions and working class families, with more people working today than at any point in history. He has invested in manufacturing and renewable energy jobs more than any previous administration. He expanded benefits and services for veterans, passed the first meaningful gun violence legislation in 30 years, and he saved our economy when other countries continued to struggle to recover from the pandemic. He is a true statesman in every sense of the word. Illinois Republican Party Chair Kathy Salvey. Today's announcement is the culmination of years of lies from the Biden White House and the Democrats shaming anyone who questioned the fitness of President Biden. Democrats are divided, torn apart by their own duplicity, trying to pass off President Biden's inability to fulfill his role, while Republicans stand united behind President Trump and an agenda of freedom, prosperity, and safety. Democrats have become the party of self-service, while Republicans have become the voice of this nation. We, as Illinois Republicans, must continue to call attention to J.B. Pritzker's tax and spend pro-criminal agenda that drives families away from this state to protect the rest of the nation. Turning to page 2 of today's Decatur Herald and Review, Man Accused of Firing at Women by Tony Reed, Decatur. Courtney A. Dodd is accused of escalating an argument into violence by pulling out a gun and opening fire as a Decatur woman fled from him in a car. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said the woman had earlier been arguing with another female when Dodd intervened on the female's side. The 29-year-old victim said Courtney produced a black handgun from his pocket, the affidavit said. The victim said Courtney stood in front of her vehicle and was approximately 6 feet from the hood, and then fired 3 shots in the direction of her vehicle. Her Ford Edge had 2 defects in the hood and the grill, consistent with bullet defects. The incident dates to the night of March 13th at the intersection of South Stone Street and East Johns Avenue, and Dodd, 31, is pleading not guilty to 2 charges alleging the aggravated discharge of a weapon. He also denies a further charge of being a felon in possession of a weapon. The case is set for a jury trial August 19th in Macon County Circuit Court, and some idea of Dodd's defense to the charges was outlined when he appeared in court for a preliminary hearing May 22nd. Defense attorney Steve Jones, cross-examining officer Zachary Harding, pointed out that no weapon had ever been recovered, and there was no DNA or fingerprint evidence linking Dodd to the shooting. Jones also said bullet fragments, a spent shell casing, and other recovered evidence might not be linked to the crime either. You have no way of telling how long these materials were there in the roadway prior to you being there? Jones asked. No, sir, Harding replied. The officer also said the victim wasn't sure about exactly when her car had received the bullet damage. Dodd waits for his trial date in the Macon County Jail after Judge Lindsay Shelton had earlier ruled he represented too much of a danger to public safety to be granted a pretrial release. Turning to page 4 of today's Decatur Herald and Review, Police, Serial Robbery Suspect Made Mistakes by Tony Reed, Decatur. Police accused Gerald M. Brandon of being a serial robber, whose series of blunders soon got him arrested and jailed. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said the 34-year-old defendant struck first on the evening of May 29th, and things started going wrong for him right away. The affidavit said that the tobacco and vape shop Brandon targeted in the 4700 block of East Maryland Street is a place where he was already well known because he shopped there as a legitimate customer. Officer Rydick Braden, who signed the affidavit, said the clerk immediately recognized Brandon, even though he wore a mask, which in any case exposed his distinctive hair, which had been dyed red. Braden said the suspect had been armed with a 6-inch kitchen knife and used it to menace the 21-year-old store clerk. Brandon then grabbed more than $1,500 out of the till's cash drawer, but not before also snatching several packets of cigarettes. The clerk said the man had taken Newport cigarettes as well, which is what the man normally comes in for to buy. The clerk said he could recognize the male from his voice and eyes, even though he was wearing a face mask. Braden said the defendant struck again on the night of June 7th, when the masked bandit walked into a video gaming parlor in the 3700 block of North Woodford Street. This time he had no weapon at all, but threatened to beat a 40-year-old female staff member with his fists, telling her, "Don't make this harder than it has to be," according to Braden. But despite the threats, the woman convinced the robber she couldn't open the till, and he fled empty-handed. Braden said officers reviewing surveillance video noted Brandon was easily recognizable, as he had already walked into the business before pulling the mask over his face. The defendant's third and final robbery, according to police, targeted a gas station convenience store in the 3700 block of North Woodford Street just before 6 a.m. on June 16th. The 41-year-old assistant manager said Brandon was armed with what appeared to be a kitchen butter knife and threatened to try to stab the woman with it if she didn't open the business safe. Braden, writing in another sworn affidavit, said the assistant manager told him she didn't have access to the safe, and the defendant settled for clearing out the contents of the cash register. He also grabbed two bottles of Tito's brand vodka before fleeing. The stolen cash, however, was equipped with a tracking device, and members of the gas station security staff told police they had traced it to an address in the 1400 block of East Wellington Way. Officers spoke to witnesses who said they observed a man who appeared to be in a hurry go inside an apartment in 1450 East Wellington Way, said Braden. Witnesses said they later observed the same man exit the apartment and throw something onto the roof before returning to his apartment. That item, police claim, was the tracking device. Within an hour of the latest robbery, Brandon was under arrest. A search of his apartment, according to the police, turned up the face mask and clothes he had been seen wearing during the crimes. The butter knife was also found in the sink, and the two stolen bottles of vodka were discovered stuffed under a mattress. Brandon is pleading not guilty to two counts of both armed robbery and aggravated robbery, and a further charge of robbery. He is due back in court for a pretrial hearing September 4th, and remains held in the Macon County Jail after pretrial release was denied. Turning to page 5, National and World News. The Digest. Israeli airstrikes kill at least 15 in Gaza. The Gaza Strip. Israeli airstrikes killed at least 15 people, including women and children, overnight in Gaza, according to hospital officials and a body count by the Associated Press journalist on Sunday. The latest strikes occurred as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu prepared to leave Monday for the United States, where he is expected to meet with President Biden and address Congress to make his case for the 9-month war against Hamas, while ceasefire negotiations continue. A team will be set to continue talks on Thursday, Netanyahu's office said. The already precarious humanitarian conditions inside besieged Gaza have worsened with the discovery of the polio virus in sewage samples in Gaza. Pilot killed in Niagara Falls crash identified. New York. Officials released the name of a pilot Sunday who died in a skydiving flight after her passengers jumped from the aircraft near Niagara Falls. Melanie Georger, 26, was the only person on board when the single-engine Cessna crashed Saturday, the Niagara County Sheriff's Office said in a statement. Georger, of Towanda, New York, was working to become a commercial pilot, her father said in a statement on social media. My beloved daughter, my best friends, and one of the two lights of my life passed away suddenly today, Paul Georger wrote. Melanie was a pilot, on the cusp of realizing her dream to fly for the airlines. She was doing what she loved, flying for a local skydiving company, when her plane crashed. The skydiving company, identified by the sheriff's office as Skydive the Falls, declined to comment. The company advertises a scenic flyover of Niagara Falls before each skydive. War. Russia and Ukraine exchanged drone, missile, and shelling attacks on Sunday. At least two people were killed in Ukrainian strikes on the partly Russian-occupied Donetsk region, Russian state media said, while Ukrainian officials said Russian strikes wounded at least five people. Bangladesh. The top court in Bangladesh scaled back a controversial quota system for government job applicants Sunday, a partial victory for student protesters after days of nationwide unrest and deadly crashes between police and demonstrators. Miami. A man stabbed a woman at Miami International Airport on Saturday night, setting off fears that an active shooter was in the terminal, and hundreds of other travelers were evacuated as a precaution, authorities said. The woman was in critical condition, authorities said, and the man was arrested. Utah. A wildfire in Salt Lake City forced people living uphill from Utah's state capital of Salt Lake City to evacuate, and it remained uncontained Sunday as more than 100 firefighters worked to protect nearby homes. Kentucky. Rescue teams over the weekend found Scott A. Hearn, 48, who was reported missing more than 2 weeks ago, in a wilderness area full of steep cliffs and jagged terrain in eastern Kentucky. Philadelphia. Jose Flores Huerta, 36, who was convicted of helping two other men escape prison while he was in custody over a fatal brawl among soccer fans outside a famed Philadelphia cheesesteak restaurant, was sentenced in the escape case Thursday to 23 months plus probation. Campaign security. Trump's requests denied. Secret Service refusal likely to come up at Monday's hearing, by Darlene Superville, Associated Press. The Secret Service has acknowledged it denied some requests by Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump's campaign for increased security at his events in the years before the assassination attempts on him at a recent rally. In the immediate aftermath of the July 13th attack, the law enforcement agency denied rejecting such requests, but the Secret Service acknowledged late Saturday, a week after the attempt, that it had turned back some requests to increase security around the former president. The reversal is likely to be a key focus of a congressional hearing Monday, where Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle is expected to appear before lawmakers who have been expressing anger over security lapses that allowed a 20-year-old gunman to climb atop the roof of a nearby building at Trump's rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, and fire his weapon. Trump was wounded in the right ear. One rallygoer was killed and two others were injured. Secret Service gunmen killed the shooter. The attack was the most serious attempt to assassinate a president or presidential candidate since Ronald Reagan was shot in 1981. It was the latest in a series of security lapses by the agency that has drawn investigation and public scrutiny over the years. The Secret Service has a vast, dynamic, and intricate mission. Every day we work in a dynamic threat environment to ensure our protectees are safe and secure across multiple events, travel, and other challenging environments, the agency's chief spokesperson, Anthony Guglielmi, said in a statement released late Saturday to the Washington Post. The newspaper was first to report on the agency's reversal, which it said was based on detailed questions submitted to the agency. We execute a comprehensive and layered strategy to balance personnel, technology, and specialized operational needs, Guglielmi said. He said the agency will rely on state and local law enforcement departments in some cases where specialized Secret Service units are unavailable. In some instances where specific Secret Service specialized units or resources were not provided, the agencies made modifications to ensure the security of the protectee, Guglielmi said. This may include utilizing state or local partners to provide specialized functions or otherwise identifying alternatives to reduce public exposure of a protectee. After the assassination attempt, as reports began to circulate that the agency had denied the Trump campaign's requests, Guglielmi issued a denial. There is an untrue assertion that a member of the former president's team requested additional resource securities and that those were rebuffed, he said in a local media post. This is absolutely false. In fact, we added protective resources and technology and capabilities as part of the increased travel campaign tempo. Turning to page 4 with some entertainment news. Television Q&A with Is Meemaw in Sheldon Spinoff by Rich Heldenfels, Tribune News Services. Question. With the planned spinoff of Young Sheldon, is there any chance Annie Potts will be on the show? I think she is great as Meemaw. Answer. Lots of folks have been wondering about the cast on Georgie and Mandy's First Marriage, the sequel to Young Sheldon, featuring on Sheldon's older brother and his wife, and how much it will overlap with Young Sheldon and The Big Bang Theory. At the recent Television Critics Association summer event, TV Line reported that Potts, Zoe Perry, who played Mary Cooper, and Regan Brevoort, Missy Cooper, are all set as guest stars, Potts and Perry in the first episode, Revoort in the second. The series premieres October 17th. Question. My nephew is a fan of old boxing movies, but has never seen The Great White Hope, 1970, with James Earl Jones, The Harder They Fall, 1956, with Humphrey Bogart, and Monkey on My Back, 1957, with Cameron Mitchell. Is it possible to purchase them on DVD? Answer. I found all three for sale on DVD on Amazon.com. Question. Can you help with what movie had the song I Wish I Was in Love Again? The only part of the song I remember is The Conversation with the Flying Plates. Answer. Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland performed the song. Actually, I Wish I Were in Love Again. In 1948's Words and Music, a movie musical loosely about the legendary Broadway team of Richard Rodgers and Lorenz Hunt. Rooney plays Hart, Tom Drake is Rodgers, and Garland plays herself. The song is originally from the 1937 Rodgers and Hart musical Babes in Arms. The show inspired a 1939 movie of the same name, also with Rooney and Garland, but that movie did not include I Wish I Were in Love Again. Happy birthday today to Terrence Stamp, who is 86, Danny Glover, who is 78, Don Henley, who is 77, Willem Dafoe, who is 69, Emily Saliers of the Indigo Girls, 61, actor David Spade, 60, and singer Rufus Wainwright is 51. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, July 22nd, 2022. Please stay tuned.